Blog Talk Radio.
King Jr. Day. I'm so excited to be on the broadcast with you, and happy Sunday to you as well. I'm excited, although it's very cold in Connecticut. We are not having any snow, and I am very, very excited about that. Oh, I am your host, as I said, and not only is it Martin Luther King's birthday, it is also the birthday of my very good friend, Yolanda Webb. And I know how excited she must be to share birthday with such an amazing gentleman. So if she is listening, I want you to call in, my sister, and tell me what it is like for you to be sharing birthdays with one of the world's greatest, greatest people and mentor and model. So the number, and anybody can call in, I'm encouraging you to call in. The number is 646-915-8166. Call in and let us know, what does it mean for you to be living your dreams? And, you know, what impact has Martin Luther King have on your life? And as you know, for a few weeks now, I've been doing different things from the book, What's Possible by Darian Kagan, 50 Stories of People Who Dare to Dream to Make a Difference. So not only did Martin Luther King dare to make a difference and made a difference and is still making a difference in our world, there are some other people, unsung heroes, if you may, who are doing similar things to encourage us. And today I'm going to start with the story of Mary Ann Tillman. So before I do that, however, I want to do some housekeeping. The first thing I want to remind you that the chat room is open and the switchboard is open and welcome your calls. The number is 646-915-8166. Again, 646-915-8166. And I would love to hear from you, and to also share your ideas and your thoughts. I want to also remind you that tomorrow, which is Monday, I broadcast simultaneously with Mr. James Nemley over on Building Your Extraordinary Business. And what we do on Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we feature one of the speakers from the Vision Weekend Conference platform. And tomorrow, our guest there will be Mr. Sam Orm. And Mr. Orm is the CEO and founder of One Voice Worldwide. So he will be on with Jim and I, just sharing some of his amazing insight with us on how to build our business as entrepreneurs and some of the techniques and tools that he has been using. I want to remind you that the Vision Weekend Conference, which is created and designed to be a vision transformation revolution weekend, will take place on March the 23rd through the 26th at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel in New York City. On the platform is Mr. Simon T. Bailey, Miss Crystal Washington, Miss Jan Mullock, Mr. Brian Dulaney, Dr. C.J. Cohn, Mr. W. Irvin Cohn, Mr. Brian D. Ridgway, Mr. Leon Ellis, Mr. Stephen Jackson, Mrs. Yolanda Webb, Mr. Sam Orm, Mr. Willie Crawford, Attorney Ariella Mitchell Durant, Mr. James Nemley, Miss Chandel Pitts, Mrs. Jennifer Sertle, Mr. Edward Foxworth III, and Mr. Kobe Huberman. And I am so honored to be sharing the platform with all of these amazing professionals. And I am blessed to be the founder of the Vision Weekend Conference. So today's show is brought to you by Daphne Clark Hudson Worldwide, and also one of our sponsors. So let's hear a message from two of our sponsors at this time.
Hello, and welcome to Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson Radio Hour, and we're glad you're here. Hey, listen, get over to drdaphne.in right now and get your advertisement for only $10 placed on the International Bulletin Board. That's right, for only $10, you can have your message seen by our thousands of listeners. So get over there right now, drdaphne.in. We thank you for listening to the show, and we will continue with it now. Have a great day.
All right, so that was for one of our sponsors, and from our second sponsor of today's show.
SuperFastLinkBuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
All right, so that was from our sponsor, SuperFast Link Building. So please check them out. And again, remember, I welcome your call anytime during the different readings that I'm going to be doing here. And as I mentioned before, I am starting this evening episode with the story of Mary Ann Tillman. an orchard full of good people is the topic of her writing. Mary Ann Tillman, wife, mother, and proud dog owner. When my husband and our dog were stuck in a hit and run, was stuck by a hit and run driver, I was outraged. My anger fueled a campaign to find that one bad apple. Instead, our family found healing in a whole orchard of wonderful people. First, as a proud dog owner, I have to bring out our beloved Ozzy. He's a 4-year-old Airedale Terrier. Admittedly, he was not the world's best behaved dog, but he is the absolute love of our entire family. My daughter and I saw him in a local pet store and knew we had to have him. My husband, Ziggy, wasn't so sure. He said he didn't need the dog. We didn't need the dog, but from the moment we brought him home, it has been clear. Ozzy is Ziggy's dog. He waits for him to get home each night and spend the evening staring at my husband with eyes full of love. When Ziggy is sitting in a chair, Ozzy is right there beside him with his paws on Ziggy's leg. I never seen anything like it. Ziggy calls Ozzy his best friend. It was a typical fall night in October 2006 when Ziggy grabbed the leash and took Ozzy out for their evening walk. On this particular night, Ziggy decided to walk Ozzy a bit farther because I had missed his morning walk. They were just a few blocks from home in Glendale, Pennsylvania, when all of a sudden my husband heard a noise. The next thing I knew, he told me, we were on the grass. I was holding Ozzy, who was yelling and crying. I looked up the road and saw a black car stopped about 50 yards down the block. But then it took off. That's when I realized our dog saved my life. Ozzy, all 90 pounds of him, had taken the brunt of the impact between the car and me. I had a few bumps and bruises, but he took the hit for me by stepping between me and the car. It was clear right away that the protection had come at a high price. Although we didn't realize how badly Ozzy was hurt until we took him to the vet, he had a bruised lung, a dislocated hip, and an ankle bone that was sanded down to the ligament, and a 5-inch gash across his leg. They also found a piece of the car's headlight embedded in Ozzy's face. All the injuries meant he had to spend more than 2 weeks in the hospital. As Ozzy healed, the vet bills quickly added up to all over $5,000. We honestly didn't think he was going to survive and weren't sure how we were going to pay these vet bills. Meanwhile, our family went on a mission to find the hit and run driver. We were so angry and hurt. And on top of that, we were frustrated and depressed because Ozzy was in a part of the vet hospital we weren't allowed to visit. We couldn't do anything for him, so we focused on finding the bad guy. We put a poster that read, "Justice for Ozzy." We called television stations and newspapers to put the word out to help us. What we believe to be a terrible find, what we believe to be a terrible person. This was during election season. So we also put flyers in the offices of all the public run of all the people running for re-election. Actually, my daughter and I did most of this work. My husband is a proud man who has never asked anyone for help. It didn't occur to him that somebody might do that It did not occur to him that somebody might do exactly that. I believe, however, that someone must have seen something that would help us find the driver. As we focus on the hunt, the most amazing thing happened. Strangers started sending money to help Ozzy's vet bills, calling to express their sympathy and praying for us. Strangers were dropping off dog supplies and toys. It never occurred to us that people would send us money and gifts. That's never what our crusade was about. One woman called the house and tell me her husband had given her $300 for their anniversary and she wanted to donate it to Ozzy. When she wouldn't take no for an answer, I thanked her profusely and asked her name and address so I could at least send her a thank you note. "Oh no, please don't," she asked. "I don't want my husband to know this is what I do with the gift money." Soon, it was clear that Ozzy's bill would be covered. We used an additional $40 to buy Ozzy a new bed and some toys. And still, the donations keep coming. Our sweet Ozzy was not only our hero, he was becoming a philanthropist. We set up Ozzy Tillman's Fund for the extra donations, which would be used to treat other dogs when other owners have no means of paying their vet bills. Ozzy certainly has his own challenges to overcome. After 2 weeks in the hospital, he had to wear a leg cast for 5 months. Even after he healed physically, he appeared to have lost his desire to go on any walks at all. We had to bring in a dog trainer to teach him it would be okay and safe to enjoy walks again. On one of the visits to the vet, I met a wonderful woman, Kelly, who had rescued and was fostering a little 15-month-old shepherd mix puppy named Freddie, who had been left out on the streets of Philadelphia. Freddie had been hit by a car and received no medical attention. So he had an old pelvic and leg injury. The shelter told his foster mom she could take him back to the shelter and have him euthanized. But Kelly wouldn't do it. I asked the vet to use some of Ozzy's funds to help Freddie's medical bill. Today, Freddie is fully healed, and his foster mom has adopted him. With all the goodness going around, we weren't prepared when one night the police knocked on the door. We have news about one of your kids, the officer said. At first, we were terrified that something had happened to our son or daughter. But the officer said, we have made an arrest in Ozzy's hit-and-run case. The driver turned out to be a 30-year-old woman who said her boyfriend had been distracting her and told her to drive off after the collision. The body shop worker on the damaged car was able to match a piece of headlight taken from Ozzy's face to the car, helping to crack the case. By the time we met the woman face to face in court, we were a very different family. It was clear that Ozzy was going to survive, and our anger had been transferred by overwhelmingly unexpected kindness of strangers. That's why I was able to look this woman in the eyes and forgive her. This was her first offense, and she clearly knew she had made a big mistake. I could see she wasn't intentionally gunning for Ozzy and Ziggy that night. I told her that everyone makes mistakes, and that she needed to go and move on from hers. I also shared with her all the amazing good that had come from that night. Her insurance company stepped up and paid all of Ozzy's vet bills, which in the end totaled $17,000. That meant the $20,000 that came in from strangers would all be donated to other animal funds. Our own vet spent her share saving a German Shepherd puppy born with birth defect. We donated thousands to the Arendelle and St. Bernard Rescue League, and some of the funds paid for new police dog puppies and its training. I hope the driver sees that good things can come out of bad situations. As for Ozzy, I'm pleased to say he is completely healed. He and Ziggy are back on their old routine of evening walks, although now he goes with a special leash that lights up so drivers can see him more easily. Not surprising, they don't go down the road where the collision took place. Other than that, their love affairs has not missed a beat. Our family has learned so much. We learned that even a dog that is not normally the best behaved dog on the block can become a hero. We learned it's a good idea to ask for help. And most importantly, we learned you might go looking for one bad apple, but the world is actually an orchard full of good people. What an amazingly powerful story. Amazing, amazing. Dreaming big in the pursuit of your passion. We are moving to. And I am this section, which is actually chapter 3 in the book, will start with the story of Sharon Hayes Brown, full-time mother and college graduate. A 21-year lesson plan. It took me 21 years, 10 months, and a day to get my college degree. 4 rambunctious kids, a husband, and a demanding life don't mix well with college. Part of my education was learning to struggle for it. In the fall of 1985, I was a bright-eyed Connecticut girl heading off to Howard University in Washington, D.C., aiming at a legal career and dreaming of sitting on the Supreme Court bench somewhere. 21 years later, I'm still a bright-eyed dreamer, with quite a different tale to tell. Let me first tell you about my grandmother. In 1986, she graduated from college at the age of 65. She was the first person in our family to reach that goal. Talk about an amazing role model. I remember her graduation day. My grandmother showed me it's never too late to go after your dream. So, through no fault of her own, she also derailed my life course drastically. One year after I started college, just after my grandmother earned her degree, she developed cancer. I made the choice to withdraw from college to care for her. I will never regret the time I spent with my grandmother, but it did mean that school and my personal dream would have to wait. Before I left the university, a special young man caught my eye, Tommy Brown, and I believe we were going to conquer the world. We married in 1991. We moved around to several places, including Georgia, Pennsylvania, When we finally settled in Charlotte, North Carolina, I thought it was time to get back to what personal dream of my undergraduate degree. As it turned out, that personal dream would have to wait. Tommy and I had another dream, building our family. Ever since I was a teenager, I knew I wanted to build my family with a combination of adopted and biological children. Just seeing how many African-American children were lavishing in foster care and how there weren't many African-American families either, able or willing to adopt many, made us decide to be a family that did adopt. Tommy and I received the phone call July 1999. We have got some news. I think we have a baby boy for you. 2 days later, we went and picked up our son, sight unseen. His name is Ori Believe. Ori is the last name of Tommy's grandfather, a wonderful man who had a strong influence on Tommy's upbringing. Ori's middle name, Believe, is sanitary. To lay eyes on him was incredible and very emotional. That was one of the happiest days of my life. Of course, any new mother would understand that my dream of going back to school full time would have to wait. Almost a year later, we receive another call from the adoption agency. They say, we have another little boy for you if you're interested. That's when we welcome Zion Zabari into our family. Zion means the place where God dwells. Zabari is the Swahili word for strong. Born 2 months premature and is in intensive care for the first 2 months of his life, Zion overcame great odds just to survive. It was also love at first sight with our second son. Still taking care of two little ones, included one in the hospital, meant full-time college would have to wait. We thought we were just going to have two boys, but then, yes, you guess it, the phone call rang again in 2002, and there came son number three. His name is Isaiah Jisani. Jisani is another Swahili word meaning child of the sun. By this time, Tommy and I realized that if we were going to fit in biological children into this mix, we had better go ahead and do it. In November 2003, I gave birth to, of course, another boy. That's our sweet Solomon soul. Other people will say to us, oh, so you adopted three children and had one of your own? We are quick to tell them we have four of our own. I say it at the time, they don't share the same blood, but they share the same parents. They are brothers in every sense of the word, but I gotten off track here. This story started with my telling you of my dream to get a college degree. This story is like my life. You can imagine how crammed my life had become, raising four boys under the age of 8. Our family was complete, and our home was a complete zoo. A joyous zoo, to be sure. Not surprising, I never did make it back to college full time, but I never gave up on the dream either. Honestly, there was never enough time or money for me to go back to school. I had only one choice, to find a way. Usually that meant taking a few as one class each semester. But you know what? You do that enough semesters, and those classes start to add up. Just as we built our family one son at a time, tackled my degree one class at a time. The hardest part was feeling guilty about the time I spent away from the boys. I went to school at night, so I involved the kids with my education. As they studied, I study. I work on projects after they went to bed. There certainly were times I wanted to quit. Fortunately, I was too far in. I also could hear my parents' voice in my head. They were not college educated, and they also insisted college was something we must do. They understood the value of an education. That meant for me, education was a non-negotiable priority. The kids often wanted me to stay home with them, but I knew they'd learn by watching me. I showed them there is no such thing as can't. In fact, in our home, they aren't allowed to use that word. I believe that rather than selfishly taking time away from them, I gave them a role model that will take them through the rest of their lives. In 2007, I graduated from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte with a double major in African American Studies and Communication with a minor in Journalism. It took me over 21 years. Let me assure you, I am not special. I was just single-minded. I always struck me that you are looking at a big challenge from the outside, it looks, but when you are in the midst of it, it just seems normal. I often heard people say that you can't have it all. It's been my experience that you can have it all if you are patient and willing to work at things. Everything you want won't arrive in your life on one day. It's a process. And if you accept things will take time and that they require focus, you can have nearly anything. Yes, anything. That includes a college degree. Earning my degree, my undergraduate degree, has inspired another dream. I will soon be starting my master's degree in creative writing. How will I find time for that? I will find a way, because I know little steps add up to big dreams. And these are Darian's takeaway from Sharon's story. Sharon's story reminds me of saying life is what happens when you are busy making plans. Many of her plans on just the way she dreamed they would as she and her husband built their beautiful family. But 20 something, Sharon surely never dreamed it would take her another 20 years to fulfill her goal of getting her college degree. The diploma she has today is no less valuable than the one she would have earned 2 decades ago. In fact, I have no doubt she cherishes it even more. It's not the journey she thought she would take to accomplish it, but at some point, Sharon was willing to let go of trying to control exactly how her dream would be realized without giving up on the dream itself. I have found that lesson so valuable in my own life. When I let go of preconceived notions of what something is supposed to look like or how and when it is supposed to appear, reality usually undoes my own imagination, which accomplishment and dreams would be possible in my life. If you let go of your preconceived ideas of what is possible, it takes little or when it surprisingly arrives. Oh, what a powerful story. What a powerful story. You are listening to Dynamic Daphne sharing what's possible. 50 stories of people who dare to dream. And what better way to share these stories other than on the celebration of the amazing Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. Call me in and let me hear from you your experiences or your dreams that you are getting ready to live or are already living. 646-915-8166. And I would like at this time to take another commercial break and just share with you from one of our sponsors.
SuperFastLinkBuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
All right. Lifting the heaviest of your dreams. And this story is from Melanie Roche, and she is a champion weightlifter. There aren't a lot of 5-foot-tall women who can lift double their body weight above their head, But that's exactly what I do. It's all part of my living my dream and making sports history. To all the folks with back trouble and all the mothers out there, it's never too late to go for your dreams. Look at me casually, and you'll see a diminutive woman with three small children running around, a husband with a state who is a state legislator in the great state of Washington, and a family-run gymnast school in Boney Lake, Washington. Hang around a little longer, and you'll come with me to an international weightlifting event where I hold a total of 400 pounds and more above my head. Let me do some math for you. I stand 5 feet tall and I weigh 117 pounds. And yes, I get the biggest rush from picking up those 100 pound dumbbells. To give you a brief premiere of the sport, there are two events, the snatch and the clean and jerk. The woman with the biggest combined total wins the best competition lifts are the snatched of 79 kilos, 173 pounds, and the clean jerk at 110 kilos, 202 pounds. And the total of 118 kilos, 416 pounds. Not bad for a washed up small town gymnast. Gymnastic was the first sport I fell in love with at the age of 12. I started training with the dream of one day going to the Olympics. In retrospect, I can see I had no chance. Olympic gymnasts start when they are tiny girls. But you didn't tell a determined 12-year-old not going to the Olympics. I worked hard at training, but when I dislocated my elbow in a high school gymnastic meet, it meant reconstructive surgery and the end of the Olympics dreams. That was a huge disappointment, but also the first time I would see that when one door closes, the other opens. The door didn't open right away. However, I went off to college and did the typical drill of gaining weight and letting myself get out of shape. I didn't even think of myself as an athlete anymore. But the summer after my freshman year, I ran into an old friend. She was now on the weightlifting team and asked me if I wanted to join. I had a picture in my head of what female weightlifters look like. It was nothing like I look and wanted. I said, no way. The next summer, I ran into the same girl again, and once more, she invited me to check out the gym where she lifted weights. By this point, I was even more out of shape than I thought. Maybe I should try this. It was April 1994. I went out on a Saturday afternoon and instantly fell in love with weightlifting. I was sure I wouldn't want to compete. I just wanted to get back in shape. So much for the best laid plans. By June, I had entered my first competition and actually qualified for America Open. At the time, I didn't know what a huge opportunity it was for me. It created a life lesson for the first half of my career, learning never to take success for granted. The problem was that, in fact, I had other priorities, such as a boyfriend who had a boat on the lake. I blew off weightlifting again, and although I had lots of talent that I underappreciated, it stagnated. Thank goodness, one of the most important people in my life would leave me alone. His name is John Trush, and he is one of the best weightlifting coaches in the world. He happened to live right down the road. He kept calling me, and at his urging, I agreed to get serious about weightlifting and go into the American Open. Lo and behold, registered. The next year were a blur, a great weightlifting success and a great failure in my personal life. I won my first national championship in 1997 when I was still in my early 20s. I had been married during this time, but I was slowly fizzing out. Something I never thought possible. To be truthful, the relationship was rocky before I restarted my weightlifting, but it was over and I divorced that year. With that emotional battle behind me, my career as a weightlifter took off. I also met a wonderful man who would not only support my weightlifting in critical moments, but over the next 8 years would also become my husband and the father of my three beautiful children, and I was still weightlifting. It wasn't all rosy. I had achieved worldwide recognition for lifting in my weight class, but the problems began almost immediately. My husband was facing bitter challenges in his political ambitions. He actually lost his first election, but prior to our marriage, he would soon be starting a family. I hyperextended my elbow in the Pan American Games in the late 1990s, requiring rehab and developing a herniated disc in my back just 8 weeks before the Olympics trials. I was busy and things weren't going well. In fact, I was devastated athletically because I missed my shot at my dream, the Olympics. I bombed out on the trial due to my injuries and returned to Washington as a defeated soul. I tried to watch the Olympics that year and cheered on other friends as they were living their dreams I wanted to be there with them so badly. I couldn't take the sadness, so I turned off the TV and didn't watch a moment of the Olympics that year. But turned off the TV is easier than your dreams. I thought about a comeback after the birth of each child. Finally, after the birth of our third child, I decided it was now or never. I was in my early 30s, and I found I had more than age working. First challenge my husband and I never saw coming. Our younger son, Drew, was diagnosed with autism. As a devoted mom, I was devastated. And I spent the better part of that summer establishing an extensive therapy program for him. I also had to come to grips with the fact that our sweet boy may never go to school dance, do a mission for our church, or get married, or lived out the other dreams we had for him. I went through a mourning process when I discovered my child had a disability. I also learned some important lessons from raising a special needs child. I learned to celebrate the potential of his life, and I appreciate what I have, something I never learned. In all those years, I was winning awards and accolades in the early part of my weight loss. So back to the gym and to competition I went. You should have seen the looks on some of the competitors' faces when I showed up at the trials for the Pan American competition. It was like, where did this old lady come from? I'll tell you where I was going, to the championships. Yes, I made the team. I also had a face of serious problem. My back pain was getting worse. Sometimes I couldn't even stand up as pain shot from my back down to my knees. I almost quit 3 or 4 times, but my amazing chiropractor kept me going. I also benefited from some cutting-edge back surgery. Within weeks of the operation, I was lifting again. I won the bronze medal at the Pan American Games in 2007. In many ways, my is complete. I've been able to recreate much of the success I had in my early 20s. Only this time around, I appreciated every moment of the experience. I still hunger for that big dream that eluded me when at the height of my early success, the Olympics. The trials are held in early 2008. If I qualify, you'll see my special comeback story played out on the TV in Beijing. It will be the culmination of a dream, and I hope a true inspiration for you. I'm just an ordinary woman, a wife, a mother, who believes that if you want something, you can find a way to make, you can find a way. I know you probably don't want to lift twice your body weight above your head. That's okay. But if you have a dream you have wished for, start today and get busy, it just might be closer than you think. I want to thank you, Melanie, for sharing that story with us.
Hello, and welcome to Dr. Daphne Clark Husson Radio Hour, and we're glad you're here. Hey, listen, get over to drdaphne.in right now and get your advertisement for only $10 placed on the International Bulletin Board. That's right, for only $10, you can have your message seen by our thousands of listeners. So get over there right now, drdaphne.in. We thank you for listening to the show, and we will continue with it now. Have a great day.
And if you have not yet done so, we encourage you to visit DaphneClarkHudson.com and sign up for the Vision Weekend Conference 2012 to take place at the prestigious Millennium Broadway Hotel in New York City. We have on the platform Mr. Simon T. Bailey, Miss Crystal Washington, Miss Jan Mullock, Mr. Brian Dulaney, Dr. C.J. Cohn, Mr. William Cohn, Mr. Brian D. Ridgway, Mr. Leon Ellis, Mr. Stephen Jackson, Mrs. Yolanda Webb, Mr. Sam Orme, Mr. Willie Crawford, Mr. Kobe Huberman, Mr. Edward Foxworth III, Mrs. Jennifer Circle, Ms. Chandel Pitts, Mr. James Nemley, Attorney Ariella Mitchell Durant, and of course, your host, Dynamic Daphne. We look forward to seeing you on March the 23rd through the 26th. And this conference has a few unique components. This conference, you will not be choosing which workshop to go, because you get to attend them all. We are not having breakout rooms. Everyone will be in the infamous Hudson Theater, where you will see all of the speakers. And you can even have the opportunity to begin to make some money before you get to the conference by becoming an affiliate. And that program pays you $100 for each of your contacts that decide they want to attend the conference, and you send them your special link and they register through you as an affiliate. You will get $100 for each person. And of course, that will help to offset your expenses for attending the conference in New York City. So check it out, www.DaphneClarkHudson.com, and you will see all the information for the Vision Weekend Conference. We look forward to seeing you there, March the 23rd through the 26th, at the Vision Revolution Conference, to take place at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel at 145 West 44th Street in Times Square, New York City. We will continue with our story, and this story is My Head in the Clouds, from Kent Couch, Cluster Balloon Aviator. I've been called nuts, crazy, even a balloon attic. But I don't care, because I have done something most people will never have dreamed to do. I made my boyhood dream come true. I flew through the sky by attaching a bunch of helium balloons to my wheelchair. I'm a husband, father of five, and a mini mart gas station owner in Bend, Oregon. I swear I'm no daredevil or extreme sports guy. Even motorcycles and roller coasters scare me as too dangerous. So I might be the last guy to try something wild, like floating across on chair attached with helium balloons. Ever since I was a kid, I fantasize about how peaceful it must be in the clouds. Remember laying on my back in your yard, looking up at the big puffy clouds. Just every child dream about flying through the clouds like Superman or a magic carpet. Most kids let go of their childhood dreams as they grow up, but take on the responsibility of families and careers. I never did. Sometime in 2006, I watched a TV program about a man named Larry Walters. He was the first one to figure out how to attach helium balloon to a lawn chair and make the contraption fly. Walters did it in 1982, and he has long since died of unrelated causes. As I watched that story, I thought, well, goodness, it can be done again. Here it was, my chance to float across the clouds. Of course, I first had to check with my wife. She's incredible and supports me in whatever I want to do. Looking back, I think she probably didn't believe I was entirely serious and thought that she didn't make a fuss, I would forget about it. She was wrong. My partner in this adventure was my good friend, Kimmy Fury. The pie in the sky dreamer. Kimmy was very analytical and helped me figure out the engineering end of things. First, we had to figure out how many balloons we needed. I didn't want a big hot air balloon. I wanted a bouquet, so we decided no balloon would be more than 4 to 5 feet in diameter. Then we bought a bottle of helium, filled up one balloon and tie a water bucket to the balloon. By measuring the weight of the water bottle, we figured out that each balloon would lift 5 pounds. The next step was learning how to skydive. I would need to know how to parachute out of the lawn chair if things went. The skydiving instructors were some of my hardest critics. They all warned me I shouldn't try this, and these were guys who jumped out of planes every day. I didn't appreciate their lack of encouragement. mainly because they didn't ask. They didn't even ask how I was planning to do this to see if I had thought it through. There were other critics too, but I'll bet the Wright brothers or Thomas Edison or anyone else who took big leaps had critics. It probably didn't seem like an extreme risk to them. The harshest criticism came from my youngest, who was away at college. She had told me I was being irresponsible and selfish. She actually refused to come home to help with the first flight. I admit, that one hit me hard. Like the skydiving structure, she simply had listened. I could not explain how well I believe I had thought out the plan. The day of my first flight came. We rigged up the launch chair to 56 balloons. We needed that many to lift about 100 pounds, me and the chair. The parachute had various other pieces of equipment, camping jugs filled with water hanging from the sides of the chair to act as the baldest. Off I went in the early morning, Oregon sky. Talk about a dream come true. It was just like I had imagined as a kid, only better. I had such an incredible feeling of pure peacefulness floating there in my lawn chair, felt like my magic carpet ride. I didn't feel any wind since I was floating in the wind. There was obviously no propeller, so it was very quiet. I hadn't built any steering onto the chair, so I rotated at the whim of the wind, sometimes facing north, sometimes south, sometimes west, sometimes east. I made it up to 12,000 feet when I wanted to come down to a bit to catch a better wind. I simply shoot one of the balloons out with a BB gun. If I wanted to go back up, I released some of the water jug in the wigs that made me lighter, so the balloons took me higher. To be completely honest, this flight did have its challenges. When I rose 12,000 feet up to 15,000 feet, the pressure of the aviation made six of the balloons pop. So I began descending. But when the morning sun came up over the horizon, heating the ground, that made the balloons rise again. And again, more balloons popped, this time seven. As I started to fall, I did some math. I had started at 5, at 57.13, were gone. I was dropping about 7 feet per second. I knew I had to think about landing. I radioed back to Kim and my case team. I told them I either had to drop weight or throw my parachute over and use the parachute and jump. Kimmy made the call. "I think you are better off to use the parachute," he recommended. So that's what I did. I jumped off the lawn chair at 2,200 feet. Good thing I took those skydiving lessons. Despite that those instructors warned, I landed just fine in the cow pasture. Whew. The lawn chair didn't fare as well. As soon as I jumped, the balloon shot stared up into the sky. The balloons and lawn chair have never been heard of since. Overall, I was thrilled with the experience. Kim and I figured we learned so much from the first flight that we had to send me up again. The second time, we used a recycling bag chair for our comfort, for more comfort, more balloons, for more lift, and more water in the jugs for more elevation. Control. The improvements help, and I flew 100 miles further than the first time. Again, I had the time of my life. This time was extra special because my doubting daughter was now along for the launch. Since she had been how well the first flight went, she wanted to be part of the case team. Unfortunately, we again lost the balloon and the launch chair at the end of the flight. This time I bailed while flying just a feet above the ground. And again, with the lack of weight, the contraption took off. We are actually offered $500 reward if anyone happened to come across a lawn chair with a bunch of deflated helium balloons attached. I'm not done. My dream is to one day fly across the open plains of Australia. Some people don't understand, just like they don't understand my original dream. But there's what I know. Everyone has a dream inside with dreams from long ago. Even the most business-like professionals. We are only in this world once. The time is now to make these dreams come true. Of course, cluster ballooning isn't for everyone. But whatever your dream is, forget the critics and go for it. Just don't call me to watch. It is motorcycles or roller coasters. That could scare me to the end. And here are some of Darian's takeaway. Hello, everyone. I didn't want all of you to go tie a bunch of balloons to a lawn chair in your yard. But I do appreciate the way Kent is able to hold on to his balloon and dream. Sense of wittiness. What did you daydream about when you were a kid? What dream would you still like to accomplish? That is amazing, amazing, amazing. And next Sunday, we will start with the story of Dan Dunn. And Dan's story is a painting myself out of the corner. Painting myself out of the corner is the story of a 45-year-old artist, which we will do next week. And again, I want to encourage you to visit us at DaphneClarkHudson.com. Signed up for the Vision Weekend Conference, which will take place on March the 23rd through the 26th at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel in New York City, slap bam into Times Square. And I invite you to visit, to join us on Monday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when I will host the A New Day show with Mr. James Nemley from the Better Building Your Extraordinary Building show. Each Monday evening, we feature one of the speakers of the Vision Weekend Conference. And our guest for tomorrow, the 16th of January, our guest will be Mr. Sam Orm, CEO and founder of One Voice Worldwide. So we ask you to join us there. And just as a friendly reminder, these are the speakers platform of the Vision Weekend Conference. Attorney Ariella Mitchell Durant, who is a copyright attorney. We have Mr. James Nemley, who is a business coach. We have Ms. Chandel Pitts, who is a design consultant. Mrs. Jennifer Sertle, who is a strategic expert and author. Mr. Edward Foxworth the Third, who is a personal productivity strategist. Mr. Huberman, who is a CEO of Strategic Landscape. Mr. Willie Crawford, who is a joint venture guru and millionaire. Mr. Sam Orm, CEO and founder of One Voice Worldwide. Ms. Yolanda Webb, who is the president and CEO of Elong Incorporated. Mr. Stephen Jackson, who is the general manager of RDZ Media. Mr. Leon Ellis, who is a restaurateur, entrepreneur, and motivational speaker. Mr. Brian Ridgway, who is a transformational mentor and teacher. Mr. William Irwin Cohn is a business consultant. Dr. C.J. Cohn, who is the CEO of Dominate Your Destiny. Mr. Brian Dulaney, who is a SEO expert and social media strategist. We have Ms. Jan Mullock, who is a master of positive achievement. We have Ms. Crystal Washington, who is a social media strategist and social media marketing consultant. And of course, we have Mr. Simon T. Bailey, who is the founder of the Brilliance Institute and Brilliance teacher himself. And I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, who is the founder of the Vision Weekend Conference. And I encourage you to once again visit us at www.visionweekendconference2012 to take place at the Broadway Millennium Hotel in New York City. And I nearly forget, I also want to add congratulations to my friends, Stephen McGrath and Michael Couch for wedding yesterday. Yes, they jumped the broom yesterday down in Delaware. And I tell you, I've never been to a wedding and cried so much, but I tell you, I watched it online and I had my bath towel out because the tears were rolling. And I thank you guys for allowing me to be part of your special day. I love you all very much and wish you continuous love and speedy recovery to you, Stephen, and just enjoy the life one day at a time. Love you guys. I'll see you tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. with Building Your Extraordinary Business. Love you.
You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. missile call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.